Okay. So welcome. Thank you all so much for making some time tonight to be here. I'll start by acknowledging that although we are spread out, we are all gathered in various parts of Mi'kma'ki, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq. This is territory that's covered by the Treaty of Peace and Friendship, a treaty which is every bit as valid today as it was the day it was signed, which of course means that in all we do in this place, we are treaty people. As I was doing some reading about Mi'kmaq culture, I'd like to, make sure my territorial acknowledgments are relevant to the thing that we're talking about. So I was just doing some reading today. And I was reading about just the like interactions within Mi'kmaq society pre-contact. And one of the things that I read that really stood out to me was that equality and human rights were so central to Mi'kmaq society and communities that greed and intolerance were all but unknown. And I think so often when I think about, all the things that happened after contact, there are so many pieces of good things that were lost from contact. Like certainly that's not true of our society today, and we wouldn't need a workshop on how to do advocacy with children and youth if we lived in a society that really focused on equality and human rights and caring for one another. So I think it's, another good reminder of the importance of looking to and learning from the people of this place and the way that they lived here since time immemorial. Okay, so welcome again. This is Inspired Faith, doing advocacy work with children and youth. And maybe we'll do some quick introductions. So I'll stop sharing that just for now. I think most of you know each other, but I don't know if you all do. So I think what we could do, if you're all up for this, is to each take a turn. And say, tell us your name and the parish that you attend or are affiliated with. What brought you here, and slash or what experiences you have of being involved with advocacy work. Okay, I'm going to say that again because it sounded convoluted. Your name, your parish, what made you want to come tonight, and what advocacy work you've been involved in. Okay, so I'll go first, and that will be your second refresher, and then we'll be ready to launch in. So I'm Allie, and I decided to host this, so that's why I'm here. I've done some advocacy work. Not, I wish that I could say that I've done more than I have. I was on the Youth Council for the Primates Fund for a number of years, and we did a national water project when I was on that council. And that involved quite a lot of advocacy work to the federal government about providing clean water on Indigenous reserves. So that is my primary experience. Anyone have a fun suggestion of the order we should go in? Maybe we could do participation by invitation so everyone gets to invite the next person. Does that sound good? Okay. Chris.
Thank you, Allie. I'm Chris. I'm in the parish of Kentville. What drew me here? The topic is so interesting. It's so relevant, and I always want to know more ways of doing advocacy to be make myself more aware for parish ministry and in life in general. And I've been involved with advocacy work through my work in the parish, through involvements in the church. One of the pieces that I've been really involved in since coming here to Kentville is advocacy work with our unhoused community, as well as having more conversations in the parish about how we can be more connected to justice and through those parts of our baptismal vows. I think I got all the questions.
You did. You
So I
nailed
will invite Cynthia.
it. Hi. Good evening, everyone. My name's Cynthia Pelikos, and my parish actually is the Cathedral Church of All Saints. But I'm actually living physically in an area, so I've got lots of choices. Parish of French Village certainly is one, because we're on the St. Margaret's Bay in Ingram Port, and the other would be the parish of of Havertz. Wow, advocacy work. Well, I think there's a piece of me that's been involved in it or thinking about it, or it's been part of me, probably from even before I kind of realized it was. But I think it really kind of cemented when I was doing a Bachelor of Education. So I won't even say when that was, it was a long time ago. But particularly at that point around gender equality, because it was not long after the Royal Commission on the Status of Women. And I did a lot of my coursework related to gender equity. And it just it fueled maybe a lifelong interest in it. I've been connected with kids and youth through my professional life, and I think it's a very rich territory. And a project that I was involved with somewhat more recently, while I had actually retired from being a principal, I was still involved in consulting work and contract work, some of which was with the school board and directly with a school and with some kids and so on, and was a project that was really a joint effort between the Department of Education and the Department of Justice. And it had to do with re the restorative approach in schools project. And that was fascinating. It provided a way to sort of pull together a lot of things that I had actually kind of been involved with and where my interest was and so on. So I really see the potential there, and think that at this point I'm very aware of the our baptismal covenant, particularly around respecting one another's dignity for all people. I think of Jennifer Llewellyn, who's really the guru on relational theory and certainly restorative practices, and she's right here with our law school and restorative lab that has gotten started, and the whole idea of according one another equal respect, dignity, care, and concern speaks so much, I think, to our baptismal covenant and to our marks of mission, but particularly the fourth mark of mission, and very much the transformational aspirations of the Anglican Church of Canada. So I think any work that we can do at all ages around issues of justice and really trying to help people figure out what it can mean in their lives, because the challenges are so overwhelming and so huge that it's very easy to feel defeated before you even begin. And you don't even know where to begin sometimes, how to, what would be a first step. So I think anything that we can help one another with as to how we can approach this, and the idea of with young people is exciting.
Thanks, Cynthia. You
Oh
can
yes, I
invite
get to
me.
invite somebody, right? Hillary.
Hi, everyone. Hillary Murphy. I am with the Parish of Falkland in Heron Cove, and what brought me here is that I am particularly interested in diving a little deeper into how to engage youth in advocacy work. Most of my advocacy work is done in my current role at Heart and Stroke, and with like health equity across the province and as well as really across the country, and advocating to government and other like stakeholders for our conditions and beyond, especially with some of my work dealing with like tobacco and vaping use. A big aspect of that is aimed at youth, and so I think not just in like my church life, this kind of diving a little bit deeper into how to engage young people can help me both in my professional life as well. And also just that my kind of academic background in health promotion, it like one of the most key foundational aspects of the work that within health promotion is that advocacy. And so much of that is done with youth and for youth.
And also just as a like a researcher, kind of being able to kind of bring some of this maybe to my participatory action research would be kind of an amazing benefit, I think, really. So yeah. Megan.
Thanks, Hillary. So, my name's Megan Cheen, and I'm with St. John Evangelist Middle Sackville. Why I came, because it just said youth, and because I've been involved with the Godly Play and with Sunday school at all the parishes I've been at, I thought, oh, I'll come. And now, listening to everyone's story about advocacy, I haven't done a lot of youth advocacy. Add this what but at work when I worked I was in a non-traditional role for years, and we had a support group of women in non-traditional roles, and we advocated for each other. And knowing the support that I got from that group, they gave me a voice. And I think it's important for us to advocate for the youth, but we have to have them involved so that they get their own voice. So we can advocate for them, but if they get together and advocate for themselves and support each other, it's just that much more powerful. So I'm interesting to hear where this discussion's going to go tonight.
Great. Okay, well, thank you so much all for sharing all those things. And again, thank you for being here. I'm just gonna share my screen again. So here is a little bit of what our plan is for this session. So first, we're going to talk a little bit about liberation and then just get on the same page about what advocacy is and why it's important in general, as well why it's important to us as people of faith. And then we'll talk about some best practices, and then we'll have some time for questions and conversation, and we'll wrap it up with a prayer. When I was thinking about how to frame this session, a thing that felt really important was the session is about advocacy in general. So there are some, too many things in our world right now that could use a lot of really good advocacy work around them. And this isn't about any of them in particular. But what it really is about is this idea that, oh, sorry, I lost the slide. Nobody's free until everybody is free. So this is looking at advocacy as a means to for liberation for our communities, for ourselves, for the world around us. And I was reading a little bit about liberation theology as part of thinking about this. And that's a way of thinking about God that emphasizes the liberation of the oppressed, that sees the good news of the gospel as a story, a truth of liberation of people. And it looks at social concern for the poor and working to address other forms of inequality. So I just share that to say that this lens of thinking about advocacy is really rooted in this particular kind of Christian tradition. So just a little bit about what advocacy is, again, to like make sure we're all on the same page, because it can mean lots of different things. So the kind of advocacy that we're talking about tonight, in a number of the resources that I looked at to prepare, referred to it as courageous advocacy, which I thought was just a really lovely and important way to think about it. So it's speaking out against an issue of injustice, often on behalf of voices that aren't being heard. A thing that I remember hearing a lot when I was growing up about advocacy is that when you were doing advocacy, you were being the voice of the voiceless. And that is really language that isn't used anymore, because actually everyone does have a voice, just lots of those voices aren't heard. In some cases, people feel like they can't access their voice. But many times people are just choosing not to listen to them. There's a There's a lovely Desmond Tutu quote that I read that I'll share, and it reminded me of a story. So I'll tell you all those things now. There comes a point when we need to stop just pulling people out of the river. We need to go upstream and find out why they're falling in. So advocacy is that upstream work of figuring out why people are falling in. People are in the river and maybe need help getting pulled out. That's still important. So both parts matter, but we're talking about that. What is happening? What is the cause? And what can we do to change that? So the story that this made me think of that I heard a lot. I grew up in the church, and like I heard this story more times than I can tell you. It's not the footprint story. This is probably the number two story that I heard after the footprints in the sand. It's there's a girl on the beach, and there's all these starfish that are washed up, and she's just picking them up one by one and throwing them into the sea. And someone comes along and says, "There's no way that you can save all this star, all these starfish." And she says, "But I made a difference for that one." So this is, not throwing just one starfish at a time, but figuring out why it is that all of these starfish are on the beach. I read, like a response to that story once that when I was in university that said, "It actually is just a really normal thing when the tide goes out, starfish are on the beach. The tide's going to come back and the starfish are going to be fine." But anyway, incidentally, I found out that that story is based on part of a really long essay by this writer named Lauren Isley, who is this like really well-respected humanitarian writer. I requested the book of essays from the library. I haven't gotten it back yet, so I'll send you an email to update you when I read the original story and find out if it holds up. Anyway, back to the actual point. There are so many injustices in our society that are really rooted in policies that don't serve people, and in particular, that don't serve the most vulnerable people. And advocacy works to change those policies or to help change decisions that are made by people in power, that upstream change that Desmond Tutu talked about. So, like I said, people still need to be pulled out or need help pulling themselves out, but advocacy works to address the core issue rather than just dealing with the impacts of that issue. And courageous advocacy embodies action taking, challenging injustice, and becoming agents for change in the transformation of ourselves, our relationships, and our communities. And in particular, a thing that, lots of research about young people and the church and faith says is that young people want to be involved in church communities or communities more broadly, where meaningful action is happening. Like not just a church that talks about things, but a church that does that kind of embodied work that this kind of advocacy talks about. So when people say things like, "Oh, how could the church be relevant to young people?" Things like this is part of that. Okay, so why, given all those really great things about advocacy, maybe it's already obvious why it's important, but just in case it's not, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child states explicitly that children have a right to be part of advocating for change. I think that's a really powerful thing that n not a lot of people know. I actually think if we as a culture, as a society, took that convention really seriously, it would be really transformative in a lot of ways, even if this was the only piece that people took really to heart and let change us. I think it would have a huge impact. So this having a right or have being given the opportunity to be part of advocating for change is something that children and young people aren't often invited to do. And in many cases is something that's actively denied. Children and young people are told, you'll understand when you're older. You just don't understand the way of the world. You have a bleeding heart when you're young, but once you're older, then you'll come to your senses. None of those things I actually believe to be true, but those are things that young people hear. And by doing advocacy work with children and youth, we actively encourage them in using their voice and helping them to know that they have a right to be heard. And that's a really empowering thing for anyone, but especially young people, to be able to grow up with that sense of confidence that that they have a voice that matters and they can be part of making a difference. And again, all of those things are good and important in and of themselves, but this work is also intrinsically important to us as an expression of our faith. Throughout scripture, it's really clear that God's vision for the world is one of justice and human flourishing. And in doing advocacy work with an understanding of working towards liberation, we are part of building the kingdom of God. Sometimes people say things like that, and I think you're really overstating it, and that's really dramatic, and blah, 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 whatever. But I really don't think that it is being dramatic or overselling the point. Like, this is directly part of transforming the world into the way that God calls us to do. And like Cynthia mentioned earlier, like, that's the work of the fourth mark of mission. That's the fourth one, right? Transforming, working to transform unjust structures of society. That's what advocacy work is. So I wondered, friends, if there are any pieces of scripture that come to mind for you about our faith and advocacy work. So pop quiz.
I don't have chapter and verse, but when I think of advocacy work, I always think of the story in the gospel when the guy is sick in bed, and to bring him to Jesus, they take the roof off. That's my best summary of it.
That's a good.
But yeah, just because thinking of, how important they thought it was to get him to that resource of the healing of Christ, they were willing to literally change the structure. So that can apply to all the situations we named with the groups and people we want to advocate for and lift up.
I think the examples that we have to of Jesus doing things that were so out of what was the norm for his society, his engagement with women. The longest conversation in the New Testament is his conversation with the woman at the well. So here he has that conversation with not only a woman, that is not something that they're doing, it's a woman out of his tradition. She's not well regarded, it seems, from what the information we have. She's not well regarded in her own community. She seems to be ostracized or alienated in some way, and you sort of can guess at some of that. But her encounter with Jesus is transformative. And there are aspects of the Eastern Orthodox Church that actually have extended that story, and they've given her a name, Fotini, and she's really, a disciple and an apostle and so on. She goes on to do apostolic work, really, beyond that. But I think the people that Jesus came in contact with and that he allowed himself to be involved with that ran contrary. He was a disruptor. He disturbed the status quo. You talk about courageous action. And there were lots, obviously, there were significant implications for that. But I think those are examples that we can look at in terms of that kind of courageous advocacy that descriptor for advocacy.
This feels like the most obvious scripture to name for this, but Micah chapter 3, verse 16. It's like my guiding piece of scripture for my whole life, but I think it really does speak to this. So that's the what does the Lord require of you? Do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. And I think for me, in thinking about doing advocacy, like those three things really are it. Like, justice is obviously really core. And I think kindness is an important piece of it. I don't think it means you need to be nice all the time when you're doing advocacy. I don't think that's the same thing as kindness. And that humility part of doing advocacy, I think, is so important. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in best practices. But for me, that's a big one.
I went and grabbed my family Bible.
I thought that's what you did. Okay, yes. What do you got
And
for us?
and so it was my grandmother's, and in the back of it, I thought maybe she has something written because she wrote things like to witness is Act 1 to 8, worship is Luke 4 to 8, to respect your wife, read Proverb 31. So it was in the back. I went, did she write anything down?
Oh.
She hadn't, but I thought, oh, I better
Darn.
go grab that. So yeah, so I was looking to see if maybe my grandmother had some advice or an answer to your question.
What
No.
a moment that would have been, if
Oh,
only.
I know. Yeah, I know. But she did have a meeting at on 7:30 p.m. on a Sunday, the 28th in 1948. So that's written on the back of the Bible too. So
Okay. Wow.
yeah.
Next step is to track down the minutes from that meeting, find out what happened. Like a little
All the
puzzle.
archives.
I mean, like there are advocates throughout the Bible,
There is.
the advocating for the freedom of the Israelites, like that's definitely a key example of that within the history. So yeah, lots of examples.
Yeah. Hillary, just as we were talking tonight, I had thought of the Micah thing earlier, but I was thinking a few years ago, at our Community Roots Day camp, we use a godly place story at the start of each day. And we told a story from Jeremiah, I think, that talks about go to this place and it's not your place and you'll be a stranger in a foreign land. This isn't the language you use at camp, but go there and build houses. And I don't remember the details, but the vibe is it will be hard and eventually you will flourish. And I hope that advocacy can be like that. It will be hard, but eventually we will all flourish together. Yeah. Okay, thank you for all those scripture pieces. Okay, I've got a list of some best practices, so I will pop those up. All right. It's a two-part list, so this is the start. I'm gonna flip off back to my notes and try to remember where that page ends. Okay, so first, I want to say super clearly that I am in no, by no means an expert on doing advocacy. There are people who this is their life's work, and that's not me. I'm a person with big interest, and I did lots of research to talk to you about this. But lots of other people are a lot smarter than me. So I pulled all of these things from lots of different lists and lots of articles and things. And a number of the same practices kept popping up over and over and over. So that's what I'll share with you. The first one is really huge and really important. And, having worked with all of you, I know that this won't come as a surprise, but it still feels really important to say. That children and youth should never be used as pawns to convey someone else's point of view. So, if you are coming to this work with an idea of the cause that you're hoping to advocate for, and you want young people to help you do that, help you to make it happen because their voices will help make a change, you took a wrong turn somewhere. Like, take a few steps back and think about what brought you to that place. Because the intentions may well be very, very good. But children and young people are people, and so deserve to do this work for themselves in a different way than just coming along with what your vision for them might be. Instead, what you should do is co-design a plan with the young people, with the children in your community. Talk to them about what's important, and what change they would like to see in the world. At the end of this, there's a list of resources, and I'll send that to all of you. And one of them, has a number of different activities to do with that you can, like, it's a step-by-step activity guide of things you can do with children and youth to talk about this. And one of them has a really lovely process for working with kids to think about how they fit in the world, and what kinds of changes they'd like to see, how they'd like to see the world differently. So it is not as simple as just saying, okay, we're going to write letters about XYZ issue. It will take more time, but it's much richer and more deep and more meaningful, to do that planning together. This is about a mutual effort of learning and growing together. You don't come to this work of doing this with children and youth as an expert, but like, let's learn together and figure out how we can work together to make a change. So the next piece is very much connected to that, which is to incorporate mentorship into this work. And remembering that age isn't the only thing that makes someone a mentor. Just because someone is older than the children or youth that you're working with doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be a great mentor. And depending on the age of people that you're working with, like, a 14-year-old could be a mentor for a 17-year-old. Like, that's certainly a possible thing. Finding people who have experience in advocacy and can help nurture this developing, learning, and growing experience, as the children and youth you work with are honing their own skills and learning about their own voice, and growing their own experiences, that's what's valuable. Helping to bring in people who can provide that encouragement and support. Also, when you're honing in on the issues that matter to your group, the important question to ask is, where is the power to make change for that issue? And if you aren't sure, keep asking questions and keep digging until you find out. Because sometimes, the immediate place where you think the issue might be isn't actually the right place. Sometimes there are people or organizations who are just acting on policies that are prescribed to them by a different body. I'm trying really hard not to give a specific example of this because I said that I wouldn't do that. So hopefully you understand what I'm saying without an example, but finding that seat of power, who is it that actually has the authority to make decisions and make change about this is really, really key. Next up is to facilitate or seek out opportunities to learn more about that issue or the issues that your group wants to advocate for. Especially if your community is new to advocacy in an area that advocacy has been ongoing, it's important to catch up a little bit, and to make sure that you acknowledge that you're joining in a line of people who are doing this work. You are part of a community, like the community of you and other leaders and children and youth that you're working with. But you are part of a broader community and a team working for change too. We aren't the heroes rolling in to bring salvation to a situation. Liberation is always, always a group project. And it's really important to come to it humbly and with that acknowledgement of other people having a lot of expertise and doing lots of work. And in addition to that, just being really important for the work of advocacy, that also is really valuable and meaningful modeling for kids to see that. A lot of times, the grown-ups in kids' lives are kind of positioned as the experts on everything. I think that I am not alone in, like, when I was growing up, I thought my parents knew everything that there was to know. Whenever we were driving and I asked my dad where we were, he always knew where that place was. And I couldn't wait to be a grown up who knew where every place was. I absolutely don't know that now. But having adults who are able to really model that we are always learning and growing and working together with other people is important. That's a really, really valuable thing for children and youth. Okay. Yeah, I remembered correctly to click on to the next slide in time. So very much related to that, and I kind of talked about this a little bit earlier. I loved this quote that I came across, and it was like the same language in about five different places that I looked. So I didn't attribute it to anyone, but someone said it probably once first. Do it for the cause and not the applause. Doing this advocacy work isn't about gassing ourselves up or making us feel good. It's about making change. There are pieces of doing this work with young people that are really great for self-confidence, for personal development, all of those things. And that can be true at the same time as this being true. It's not about doing this to make ourselves feel good, but to make meaningful change in the world. Next is to get to know your local politicians on all levels, municipally, provincially, and federally. Like you can meet with them, write to them, get people to sign petitions and take them to them. I know that our political systems are complicated and don't always work in the favor of people in the way that we might hope that they would. But at the end of the day, these politicians are people who work for us and who are beholden to us for the work that they do and the impact that they have. So getting to know them and, as much as you can, depending on the level, it's a bit harder. It's really easy to get to know your municipal politicians and build relationships with them. Maybe it's a little bit harder to do that with your MP because they just have so many more people that they're serving. But, the more you're able to get to know them, like by meeting with them, or also just by finding out information about them, not in a sketchy way, but like, my MLA used to be a nurse. And that's a really helpful thing to know about her when I'm writing to her, because approaching things from a health and wellness position, that's a good way to get Elizabeth Smith Macross in to get on board with what you're talking about. So knowing who they are and what they care about, you can find common ground and really connect with them. And that can really be a powerful change maker. Next, don't be scared about protests and demonstrations, but do learn from people who have been doing this kind of advocacy for years about how to do it safely. I was going to say this is true in particular in this one way, but I think it's really true for sure if you are going about making your own protest or demonstration happening. Definitely finding out how to do that safely and to take care of the people in your midst is really important. But it also is important if you are joining in on another protest or demonstration. And especially really recently, for various protests, I found really, really good guides to how to participate safely, really readily available. Like lots of people who are promoting participation in demonstrations have that information right there. Don't take recordings of people, don't get in the face of police, wear a face mask, like things like that. So again, it's that humility of, you can't just stride in expecting that you know exactly what is best. Find out, ask the questions from good sources of people who know how to do it safely. And through all of this, it's really important to remember that all too often, children and youth are made to feel as though it is their responsibility to change the world, a world that's filled with flaws that aren't their making. Lots of policies and systems and structures are in place that make life harder for lots of people. And children and youth know that that's going to impact them for their whole lives and can feel like it's on them to fix it. And that's really, really heavy and hard. Like that really easily feeds into big, big feelings of anxiety and fear and all kinds of things that we don't want young people to be in. So it's important to make sure that the children and youth in your community that you're doing this work with have a supportive community around them and that you help them to manage their expectations. It's not a fair or reasonable or just expectation that that this is on them to fix everything. They can be part of it and can help make a difference, but it's not on them. They do actually still just get to be kids who have fun and flourish. Like if liberation and flourishing is part of this, then doing advocacy work shouldn't remove that fully from your life. Like that's not on. And especially in this managing expectations piece, helping young people to remember that they absolutely can make change, but it does take time. It's a pretty rare thing, I think, to write a letter to an MP and see a change tomorrow. But with consistent work over time, things can change. So helping manage those expectations and make sure there's good support for young people to help them from falling into that really dangerous area of doing this work is important. I could just keep going on and on and on. There's a million good things to keep in mind when you do this, but I will just share one more, which is to provide lots of opportunity for ongoing creative reflection. And I think this too is part of that, risk management work of making sure kids don't fall into that deeply anxious place. It can really help with managing feelings of anxiety or disappointment or uncertainty. And reflecting on our experiences is across the board how we learn and grow. You don't learn from the experience directly, but from reflecting on your experience. So taking time to have conversations with the children and youth you're working with about how they're feeling about what they're doing, what things seem like they're working, what things seem like they aren't. Should we try something different? Should we do this? Having those conversations, like there's all kinds of really incredible art processes that you can use for creative reflection. Like taking some time in prayer, that feels really important to name explicitly. And, praying for the thing that you're advocating about and praying for your young people, but also praying with them. Can be part of this creative reflection work. So like I said, there's a million different suggestions for best practices, but I think this is a really good foundation of things to think about as you do this work. Okay. So this is a thing that I pulled out from one of those resources that I looked at. It's one called Courageous Activism. So you'll see that on the list. So this is a bit of like a best practice for a process to follow. So this kind of pulls together several of the things that I talked about. So first, identify a problem or issue that you care about. So that in this context is really like having that conversation with children and youth to find out what they care about and how to what they care about. Next, investigate as much as you can so that you can understand what's going on and consider the various views of the situation. Then work out what could be done to change or improve the situation. Identify the people with influence to make those changes. Consider whose help you might use to make your voice more persuasive. That really wasn't included in the best practices, but is a good thing to think about. And then persuade those with the power to make changes to do something big about it. And then the last step on there is, of course, that thing I just talked about, which is doing that creative reflection work. And sometimes, you might go up a few steps and then go back, and it can kind of circle or spiral or do all kinds of, this kind of work isn't necessarily linear all the time, but that's a pretty good path to follow. So here are the resources. When I send this out, all of those will be links that you can click on to take you to different things. And most of these are kind of age-based. So you can think about who you're working with and then go to the thing that they are talking about. Okay. I'm gonna stop sharing now. And as promised, this is the end of the kind of core content that I have prepared. So I'll just say thank you to anyone who is watching this later for taking the time to watch this. And if you have any questions, or you check out the resources, or you want some more, or there's anything I can do to help you in your work, you can send me an email at youthandfamily@nspeidiocese.ca. Thank you so much.